welcome to a special Monday edition of the Rock'em Nation Weekly Podcast. I think we're going to open the floor for proposals for an ongoing name, since clearly this isn't just going to be a Thursday night deal or whatever, just whenever we feel like it, whenever we have time, whenever there's something to talk about. Tonight, it is just me, Bill, and Ross. Say hi, Ross.
Hello.
We are here to talk about the Big 12 tournament. There are availability issues as we advance through the week here as Ross goes down to cover the tournament in Oklahoma City. So we're going to go ahead and crank this out tonight. But yes, as I was mentioning, any names that you can come up with, whether they're inside jokes or great names or just names that are so awful they're great, drop it in the comments section. We'll take a vote for the name of this podcast. So Ross, any opening statements before we jump right into the preview?
No opening statements, but I do realize at the end we'll have a little bit of a teaser for insider news about the bit or whatever you want to call it that will be coming up once college basketball season's over. Can't give away exactly what's going on, but there's some news there.
Okay, well we'll save time at the end then.
All right.
Okay, well I figured the best way to go about this is just to walk through each game. 12 teams, 8 playing on Wednesday, 4 more on four more playing for the first time on Thursday, leading up to the Saturday 5 p.m. tip-off. And I always enjoyed having the Sunday tip-off, being one of the last ones, being one of the only games on. But I do kind of understand why they made the move, because it does seem like the Big 12's been kind of screwed a little bit with seeding, because they don't really take the results of the Big 12 tournament finals into account. They draw up all their seedings that Sunday morning, I guess. Because, when I do Rockentology, I do the seeds. It takes me about 30, 45 minutes.
Right.
I understand there are other things that go on, like logistically, but I don't understand why it takes them that long or whether they can't wait a little longer to find out who won to draw up the brackets and et cetera. But what do I know? That's neither here nor there. We're just going on. We're going starting on Wednesday. And I don't know. I don't really have a point. I just had to complain about that for a second.
Okay. Maybe one of these days we can get you invited to the media trial selection.
I'm all for it. All right. Well, the first game of the Big 12 tournament is the 11:30 Wednesday tip-off of Nebraska and Baylor. And apologies if you once again hear my cat yelling in the background because... anyway, it's been a long night. Nebraska, I have some Ken Pomeroy ratings set up here just because we love Ken Pomeroy so much. Nebraska facing Baylor, they just faced each other with Nebraska winning 66-62. Nebraska is ranked 60th in Pomeroy's ratings, Baylor 64. Ross, what do you see happening in this one?
I'm not really sure. Just because it's so Jekyll and Hyde, not only in how both of those teams perform on any given night, but those are such contrasting styles, and you look at the 66-62 score, and if I just gave you that score in that game, who are you saying won that game?
Oh, Nebraska by far.
Exactly. I mean, if this game's up in the 80s, Baylor walks with it. If this game's down in the 60s, Nebraska ends up with it. Whose pace is this game going to be played at? I'm trying to pull everything up right now. There were 64 possessions in that game.
Yeah.
Nebraska averages 64 a game. Baylor's up near 70. That says everything you need to know.
Yeah, the Baylor, I mean... They like to play up tempo like Missouri does, and I think Nebraska seems to thrive most in contrasting style types of situations where they can slow down a team that just really wants to push it, and they can kind of trap them and get them in situations they don't like. And so, I mean, for that reason, I think Nebraska might have an upper hand. Baylor's lost 10 of 12 here, and I just still can't totally accept that they're not a good basketball team. Because, I mean, I knew at the beginning of the year they were clearly they were a crazy team. Never really knew, they could run anybody off the court or get run off the court at any moment. But it's hard for me to accept that they really are this bad.
And, there's just such an ingrained respect for their firepower that it's hard to completely write them off.
And yet they lost 10 of 12. They really haven't been competitive for a lot of those games, losing by 9 to Iowa State, 16 to Texas. 17 to Missouri, 19 to Oklahoma. It's just, it's been one kind of bad loss after another. I don't know. Like, this is one of those, my brain says Nebraska, but my gut says Baylor. I should probably just go with my brain because my gut's usually wrong. So we'll say, I'm going to say Nebraska. How about you?
I'll say Nebraska unless, I mean, what is it, a 5-hour drive from Waco to Oklahoma City? I think Baylor, obviously, the way they shoot is the type of team that needs to get hot, needs to feed off that kind of energy. It, again, this is such a cliche to say it's all about the start of the game, because I say that before every single game, regardless of the teams, regardless of the time of the year.
If
Baylor
right,
comes
though.
Out, starts the game on like a 13-5 run, I think they could very well run away with it. But the longer Nebraska keeps it a tight game, I think their odds go up exponentially against Baylor.
Well, I think Missouri is proof that the start of the game is very important.
Right.
And, I mean, there's probably a reason for that. If you do want to pick Baylor, though, we can go to the coin toss. I have a coin right here on my desk. You let me know when to flip that.
I will take Baylor just so we can have our first coin toss of the night.
It's drama here. Okay, it's heads Nebraska, and the winner is tails. So, you know, my gut wins. Baylor moves on to the next round. And that's science right there, people.
Beautiful.
So, all right, so the next game is the, 2 o'clock, roughly, tip-off between Texas and Colorado. I realize Colorado won as the 12 seed in the 5-12 game last year, but they're just terrible. I mean, even when they are competitive, and I mean, they took Texas to overtime just a few weeks ago.
Right.
They just don't seem to have the confidence necessary to finish one of these upsets. Because I mean, even when they're competitive, they still lose. They really haven't made those big game turning shots. And I mean, their last win was January 27th against Iowa State. The one before that was against something called Western State on January 7th. And then you have to go back, I mean, into January for their, you know, their third to last loss there. I mean, I don't know if there's much need to analyze this one unless you can convince me why Colorado has a shot.
If you're asking me to convince you why Colorado has a shot, then we're going to have a lot of dead air. I mean, obviously Texas has been off and on as the season's gone on. That's, I mean, if I was a Texas fan, I can't imagine how frustrating it would have been to watch this team as Big 12 play progressed. With the amount of talent they have on that team, as well as they played in some of the games, don't take anything. Obviously, you take something away whenever they beat Oklahoma with Griffin Hurt, but at the same time, Texas came flying out in the second half, and that was as impressive of a half as I've seen from Texas in quite a while.
Well, and when Oklahoma bounced back and got really, really hot and Willie Warren couldn't miss, they just very calmly answered every single bucket down the stretch. And A.J. Abrams is kind of the wild card here, because, I mean, we've talked before about Texas is kind of the identity problem they have, where half the team is a plodding, punishing physical team, the other half wants to run. In half court or on the move, A.J. Abrams is their wild card. And if he hits 8 3-pointers, they can beat anybody in the country.
Right.
If I'm a Texas fan, I hope he doesn't waste that effort on Wednesday, because they can probably win with him going over 10. But, yeah, they're very – I'm very curious to see what Texas can do now that we've reached the postseason. Rick Barnes has been able to test all sorts of different lineups with varying degrees of success. But, I mean, yeah, clearly, I mean, Texas is going to win this game. I'll be very, very surprised if Colorado pulls a back-to-back 12-seed upsets in the Big 12 tournament.
As far as Texas is concerned, it does bring up two interesting points, though. One, I don't know if you'll agree with me here, but they seem offensively like a completely different team with Dogas Balbe running the offense.
Yeah.
Obviously, real high energy and at a lot of times not looking very in control. But at the same time, it takes on a different vibe other than either – we're going to dump it down to James or Pittman and stall for 25 seconds, or we're just going to kind of walk around until Abrams works free outside.
There was a guy, I think it was on the 03-04 Missouri team, the one that was so disappointing. His name was Randy Pulley. He was the quote-unquote pure point guard that everybody wanted. He was a JUCO transfer. Everybody got psyched because after Ricky Clemens and after Wesley Stokes, they needed somebody who was just simply a distributor, found open guys, averaged a ton of assists, and everybody immediately convinced themselves that this guy was the savior. And even though he averaged like 2 points a game at SLU as a freshman, he was going to be the savior. Eventually, when your point guard cannot shoot the ball, like cannot, will not, refuses to, as Randy Pulley did, and as Dogas, Balbe, whatever his name is, it's going to bite you. And I think it limits Texas's ceiling to have him at the point guard when he's when he's a shooting liability. But he's offered a sense of energy that they really, really needed. So I think, I mean, it's hard to explain. I think their ceiling has gone down while at the same time their consistent level of play has gone up.
And well, and as you were saying, just talking about the points and assist ratio through 29 games played this season, 8 of which he started, points per game, 3.2, assists per game, 3.2.
Yeah, that's actually pretty hard to pull off when all is said and done.
I don't know. I've done it all year. Well, been completely even in points and assists per game.
Well, you know, I mean, and there's something to that. That said, they will beat Colorado, but yeah, I'm curious to see what they do. I mean, they have beaten Oklahoma, and they competed really well against Kansas recently, so maybe they are ready to make a decent postseason showing here. On to the next game, the evening session of Wednesday night, 6 p.m., where we may or may not be recording another podcast, depending on whether my color consultation for our new house is, whether it goes well. That's all I'm going to say about that. Oklahoma State versus Iowa State. Whereas I can't convince myself that Baylor is truly a bad team, as much as I've talked up Oklahoma State a couple times, I can't convince myself that they're a team that, well, at the very least, that can threaten to win this conference tournament. They've gotten hot. They've won 6 out of 7. They ended up only losing to OU by 4 on Saturday. But I have trouble convincing myself that this is a serious team that's going to do anything more than, you know, get to the tournament, losing that 8-9 game. What are your thoughts on Oklahoma State or Iowa State for that matter?
I think, you know, the easy analysis is to say that you shut down Brackens, you shut down Iowa State. But right. At the same time, I've got to wonder, it seems like whenever Iowa State has had its big games, it seems like they've gotten quite a bit out of, you know, Peterson or Vanderbeeken or Steiger. Somebody is able to come up with big dagger threes. Obviously, you know, Brackens can put up his, what, 21 points per game or something like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because he's not getting much support. If Iowa State gets on a shooting run from outside, that's a different basketball team. I know you have trouble convincing yourself Oklahoma State is good, especially right in Oklahoma State's backyard. I've got to give the edge to Oklahoma State.
I do think I'll give, for this game for sure, I'll give the edge to Oklahoma State, simply because I think they're off. Iowa State, for a Greg McDermott team, when he took over that job, you figured they would be, you know, who knew if he could recruit all that well, and for the most part he hasn't, other than the fact that Craig Brackens, I believe, was a 5-star recruit. But you figured they'd play really tough defense, and they'd be tough at home. And anytime the other team had a bad shooting night, they'd jump up and bite them. But I mean, are they a good defense? I'm not completely convinced this is a good defensive team. OSU just ran them off the court last time with 86 points and I think 67 possessions, which is a very good number. And I mean, granted, that was a Gallagher Iba when they won by 19. But yeah, I'd be very impressed if Oklahoma State didn't win this game. I think that means we're picking Oklahoma State, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so then that leaves the evening session, which is clearly the game that we need to be paying the most attention to as Missouri fans, is the Texas A&M Texas Tech game.
Right.
A&M, since Oklahoma State lost the other day, A&M is now the hottest team in the league. Well, I was going to say other than Kansas, but Kansas did just lose to Texas Tech, so... A&M's won 6 in a row. They, you know, it's been an interesting 6 in a row. They thumped a good Texas team. They crept by an iffy Texas Tech team. They beat Nebraska on a last second shot. They killed Iowa State. They barely got by Colorado. And then, for the first 25 to 30 minutes, they destroyed Missouri before almost, getting themselves into a really, really, really precarious situation there at the end. But this is a competent team, and I think the bench output that they got on Saturday against Missouri clearly is not going to happen again. Yeah, that was a ridiculous showing from a bunch of bench players at once. But if they have Josh Carter making his shots and Donald Sloan not being too crazy, and the two big guys, Alanu and Davis, you know, if they're playing pretty well and if they continue to shoot like 70% from inside the 3-point line, all they need is maybe one bench guy, and they can make a run in this tournament. So, I mean, this is a very interesting team. The only, I'm stealing all the time here, but Tech, they did only beat Tech by single digits twice, and Tech is coming off, even though they lost to Iowa State, it's clearly been their most successful week of the Big 12 season. So, I mean, I don't know if this game is a gimme or not. What are you thinking on what kind of chances Tech has?
It's almost scary if you look at the numbers, how much both of the games that these two teams played, how close each team was to their season average in almost every category.
Yeah.
It's almost like when these two teams play each other, they play exactly within their own boundaries. They play exactly the way they see themselves playing. Doesn't really seem like either team really forced its will on the other.
Yeah.
It's hard to ignore that. I mean, in the four halves of basketball they played, the widest margin in any given half was A&M, let's see, A&M 36-30 over Tech in the second half of the January 18th game in College Station. I don't know how much you can take from that. Do you expect it to be like that and have the teams play almost by the book again?
Well, I mean, sure, it seems weird if that would happen three times in a row, but well, the thing about Tech is, you know, they really have been a lot more competitive lately. They, you know, they after losing the tight game to A&M, they went and barely lost at Texas. They were extremely competitive against Oklahoma for about 35 minutes. They destroyed Kansas, which is just the strangest result of the Big 12 season. It was funny. I mean, it happened, and nobody thought any less of Kansas or any more of Tech. It was just, you know, what was that? And then they go and they lose at Iowa State. It's hard to, if one team is going to suddenly play above and beyond themselves instead of playing right on their averages, you have to figure it's A&M. But I don't know. This one's really tempting to me because A&M is on such a run that, and now that they've actually most likely qualified for the NCAA tournament at this point, you know, this is definitely a letdown possibility.
The question I have is that as well as A&M played defensively against Missouri, you know, forcing turnovers and just making it look, you know, pretty generally lethargic in the first half, I wonder about that because in person, Texas Tech was one of the sloppiest ball handling teams I saw in the Big 12 this season. They could not protect the ball to save their life. It seemed like John Robertson was just completely lost out there. Quote-unquote, bigs had no idea what to do with it. I don't know if that was just Missouri was on that day or if Texas Tech legitimately had issues protecting the ball. If they're having issues protecting the ball, I think A&M's style alone gives them a pretty big shot at it. But, I mean, the first time that A&M played Tech only had seven turnovers. Would you have expected that from the same Tech team that showed up at Mizzou Arena?
Well, I made the mistake of reading, of analyzing the stats on A&M and really kind of, trusting them a little too much because nothing in how A&M had played the first 15 games of the conference season suggested they could do what they did to Missouri regarding both ball handling and shooting and just overall defense there in the first half. That was more out of character, I think, than their first two games against Tech. Whatever they did, they should bottle it. I mean, whether it was just, you know, it was senior night, Josh Carter got hurt, everybody decided, you know, we got to step up, we got to win this game for Carter or whatever. I mean, they played out of their minds until about the 12 or 14 minute mark of the second half. So, I mean,
let me ask you this question real quick. If you put A&M in the first half and A&M in the second half on a continuum, where do you think along that line show up in the Big 12 tournament?
See, I want to think that A&M is hot and they can run the table, but I keep leaning back towards the fact that they're more like the team they were with about 10 minutes left. Not bad. I mean, they still came through and won the game, but they're a lot iffier than they were the first 30 minutes or so against Missouri. They just had everything clicking. You know, Derek Walkup isn't going to make, you know, 100% of his threes the rest of the year. I think they're a little, they're not what they were in the first half, but momentum does exist. Momentum does, you know, they're more confident now than they ever have been.
Let me say this too. Their last three wins away from home, Texas Tech, Nebraska, Colorado. Not exactly murderer's row. Say that. Missouri couldn't win in Lincoln. But at the same time, they've also got something to prove away from Reed Arena.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, they lost to Baylor. They lost to, their other losses aren't that unimpressive. Kansas, Texas, OSU on the road. But, yeah, no, I think they're a lesser team than they've shown over the last couple of weeks. But when does that, you know, when does the slipper fall, or whatever the saying is, when does the clock strike midnight on them? How long are they going to keep up this stretch? I'm just going to... I really, really want to pick Tech in this game. Because I think it'd just be funny if we got to play Tech instead of having to play A&M again. But I'm just going to... I'm going to just assume that A&M has enough talent here to pull off a third win against them.
I've spent all day trying to convince myself that Tech has a shot. And I think they do if, you know, if Voskal goes 10-13 or whatever he does from
right.
three-point range again. I think... if they play maybe 10 times, Tech wins one or two. I'm having trouble convincing myself that Oklahoma City is going to be one of the one or two.
Yeah, I can definitely see A&M coming out cold. They're just, I mean, the other thing they have going for them is they're just bigger.
Right.
And, you know, obviously Tech played them close both times, but, I mean, in the end, A&M has there's much less margin for error for A&M. So, yeah, I'll chicken out and go with the higher seed there.
We'll go unanimous on that one.
Cool. All right, so that takes us through the Thursday games. What's our time here? Woo, we're at 21 minutes already. This thing, before we know it, these podcasts are just going to be, like, on average, like 75 minutes long or something. All right, Thursday. We'll try to pick up the pace a little bit now. Well, and we've already analyzed half the teams in the quarterfinals. 11:30 a.m. tip-off on Thursday. We've got Kansas, and we've got Baylor. Number 10 versus number 64, the first time they met. Kansas won in Waco by a score of 75-65. What do you think? Does Baylor have a chance of winning this game in Oklahoma City?
I don't care who comes out of game one, Nebraska or Baylor. I don't see Kansas losing in the quarterfinals. I just don't. I think Kansas walks over either team.
I think, well, and I mean, clearly Baylor is the crazy guy in the fight. They could come out and make 17 straight three-pointers and beat anybody in the country, but they've also proven that they're not going to do that this year. Unless they've been storing all their magic for this weekend. I mean, Kansas just has the X factor in that they can, I mean, they can play, you know, guard on guard and shoot threes with you all day long, but they have Cole Aldrich. And
right.
No matter what I think about his fouling propensity, he is a ridiculously good basketball player. And Baylor doesn't have that. So, I mean, they just said they have the muscle and the size and the interior defense that will make Baylor do nothing but take three-pointers. And, I mean, if they get hot, great, but I just don't see it. Yeah, I think Kansas, despite the fact that they just lost to Tech, despite the fact that they are a young team now in the postseason with much higher expectations than they're used to, you know, they were flying under the radar all year. You don't get to do that anymore. I still can't see Baylor having a chance in hell in this game.
Yeah, even if it's Nebraska, I don't see them having a chance in hell either.
Yeah. So that one's easy. We move on to the 2 o'clock tip-off of what...
Probably the most interesting game... possibly in the tournament in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say this. Missouri A&M will be interesting too, but yeah, K-State, the higher seed, against who we all assume is the better team in Texas. As far as Ken Pomeroy ratings, Texas is 27th, K-State's 41, and I mean, really, if they had a 41 RPI, they really would be in the tournament picture. Unfortunately, their RPI is like 190 or something ridiculous. okay, 80. But yeah, last time... I enjoy K-State, watching them play. They are kind of crazy. You never really know what you're going to get from them. But I'm just going back on yes, they won in Austin, but it took 40-something points from Denny Clemente. And one of the most amazing, just ongoing shooting performances I've ever seen there in the second half for them to pull off that game. And they still blew a lead at the end and barely won in overtime. So, I mean, I think Texas is on firmer footing here. I would love to see K-State win, go North Division and all that. But, I'm picking Texas.
I have absolutely no clue what to make of this game. Everything you mentioned, the fact that it took Clemente absolutely going off, especially how much help did he get around him that game? It could not have been significant. He had 44, and let's see, after that, Brown had 13, and no one else was higher than 7.
All I remember about that game was Clemente was amazing, and Pullen was awful. Like, Pullen almost blew the game, whereas Clemente...
Pullen was 1 of 13 from the field.
Yeah.
7% from the field.
Yeah, I could have done that. I'm very confident in saying if I just threw 13 shots up in the air, one of them would have gone in. But
that's law of averages right there.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think what you can see is law of averages mean... We'll say that Clemente will have a worse game, but... and Pullen will have a better game. He won't go 1 for 13 again. But I just, on average, I think Texas wins this game 6 or 7 out of 10 times. Maybe only 6, but probably 7, and I think they win this one.
And here might be the difference. In that game in Austin, four Longhorns of their starters finished in double figures. The only one that didn't was Connor Atchley, who played 21 minutes, had 1 point, 0 for 2 from the field, whereas Dexter Pittman came off the bench, 15 minutes, 8 points on 4 or 5 shooting. You got to figure Pittman's seeing a lot more playing time than Atchley these days.
Yeah, and I mean, I love, that's the one thing I do enjoy about Texas is that, you know, I don't know how many minutes Dexter Pittman is capable of playing in a given game, but I mean, basically, you can switch your identities at will when you find something that works. And Pittman can go in, play 14, 16, 18 minutes a game. They can be a big plotting team and then, like, soften you up and then try to run you off the court the other 20 to 25 minutes. And, I mean, I like that. They haven't found that balance yet to where they can use that as a weapon. Their weaknesses have been as strong as their strengths in a lot of ways. But, yeah, I think Pittman has only gotten better since then. And K-State, I think they peaked about a month ago. So there you go.
All right.
So
I want to add more, but we're running so high on time at this point.
I've been listening to that Adam Carolla podcast. He got fired from his radio gig in L.A. He's been doing a free podcast. He just has a friend over and they chat for like an hour, and it's the greatest thing ever. So I think I'm used to just chatting. But anyway, all right, so we got Kansas and Texas in one semifinal. We move to the Thursday evening session where, you have two matchups, rematches of games that were played Saturday. You have OU-OSU coming up first, where OU, Ken Pomeroy has not been as high on OU. They've been ranked in the teens all year. They're only number 17 right now. They did just beat Oklahoma State, but only by 4 at home. They looked great about a month and a half ago beating OSU in Stillwater by 8. But I think this is another team where, their freshest legs started giving out a few weeks ago. Even, before Griffin got hurt, I think their guards have lost their edge. And, OSU's going to have a fighting shot in this game.
I do think that, especially because OU's been thrown off their game so much recently. Not only that, anything can happen in Bedlam. We all know that. But at the same time, it seems like when Oklahoma has been able to turn it on against Oklahoma State, if they could do that for a full 40 minutes, they'd blow them off the court. Obviously, that's a cop-out answer because almost any team in the conference, if they bring their A game for 40 minutes, can run a lot of teams off the court. But I think when you watch Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, when Oklahoma isn't shooting itself in the foot, there is a definite gap between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think Fran Fraschilla had a good line, with about, 6 or 8 minutes left in the OU-OSU game on Saturday, saying that, OU was up 4 or 6 points, and he just said, doesn't it feel like they're up 15? Because it felt like they were just dictating the action and dictating the tempo and dominating physically, but they just weren't ever able to pull away. And I think a month and a half ago, they would have pulled away. I'm not completely convinced they're still capable of pulling away. And by the way, I really liked that line. And then I watched part of the Missouri-Kansas game at lunch today when you posted that free link to all the games. Yeah. And he said the exact same thing about Kansas about 8 times. So then I realized it wasn't an original observation. It's one of the go-to lines. That disappointed me, but Sorry, Fran.
Are you sticking with Oklahoma in this one, or are you going to call the 7 over the 2?
I've seen a lot of upsets in this tournament, and we're just picking almost chalk. But, I'm picking Oklahoma. I'm totally chickening out here.
I'll take Oklahoma as well. So that moves Oklahoma on to the winner of the game we'll be most concerned about, obviously.
Yep.
Number 3, Missouri, and number 6, Texas A&M.
Yeah, I tried not to overstate my case when I did my stat box score analysis on the game yesterday, in saying that look at all these different ways that A&M played way over their heads and they couldn't possibly do it again. I was basically setting myself up for disappointment if we get run off the court again in the first half. But man, oh man, every single player on their bench played about 3 times over their averages. And if that and Missouri still almost came back and caught them in the end. And so, if their bench doesn't produce at that high a level and they're not on their home court, and I see Missouri winning this game. I see them winning in the end by 12 or 14 points.
I see them winning pretty handily too, just because This is obviously not necessarily universally true because both of the rematches were at Mizzou Arena, but in the two games that they lost on the road in the Big 12 season with Nebraska and K-State, they came back and then defeated them by margins of 23 and 20. This is something I put up on the Man Eater blog earlier, and that comes out to an average of a 32-point swing in favor of Missouri between the swings road and home for the two games. So that means, what, Missouri should win by 22, but then you take away about 8 or 10 points from the Mizzou Arena advantage. We're staring down, what, 10 to 12, somewhere in that area, just like you were saying?
Yeah, and, you know, the wild card here is, you know, all these guys played over their heads, but Josh Carter and, what is it, Chinamelu Alanu? Alanu. I'm not sure about the first name. I'm struggling with first names today. Carter and Alanu both played well under their average. Alanu was in foul trouble, and Carter, you know, everybody in the stadium thought he had torn up his knee in about 18 different pieces, and then like 3 minutes later, he comes back on the court in Missouri, and A&M wipes the floor with Missouri. They're the wild cards. I mean, everybody else is not going to play as well, most likely, knock on wood, as they did on Saturday, but Carter could play a lot better. And if A&M wins, it's going to be because Josh Carter caught fire, and Alanu and Davis were able to dominate the glass, because that was one encouraging thing on Saturday was Missouri basically played them even on the rebounding, and that was a bit of a shocker. But yeah, I mean, if everything reverts to averages, Missouri wins this game.
Here's the thing, though. Everybody's saying that Josh Carter was held off the board so much. He had 13 points. Do you know how many he averages on the season?
14.
It's not like he was held that much far under. It's just that he didn't go off at key stretches in the ways that he had in other games. Right. So he didn't really notice what he was doing.
His overall box score, you know, I do the whole game scores thing. His overall box score wasn't all that impressive because, I mean, I think he didn't need to do much because his teammates were going crazy. And so he just sat back, and then when he had an open shot, he took it and made it. And then a couple times there in the home stretch when Missouri was threatening to come all the way back, he made a couple nice baskets. One of them was a hideous goaltend by Keith Ramsey, but that's another story. I think Josh Carter could go crazy, but, yeah, I think he's going to have to offset a whole lot of reverting to average.
I think the biggest question we have right now is, did A&M just peak? Did they peak last weekend?
With about 2 minutes left in the first half, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they're capable of winning this whole tournament, but I'm sure not going to pick it. I'm clearly too much of a chicken to actually pick something. I like throwing it out there, and then I can say I was right, you know, if it does happen, without actually marrying myself to the idea. No, I think Missouri, I'm confident enough in this team, the way they've adjusted to losses, like you said, against K-State and Nebraska. Not only did they play better, but they made adjustments, and I think you'll see that again. I think Missouri wins this game. So, we'll go into the bonus, the 60-second round here. Kansas-Texas. What do you think?
Kansas.
Well, that was even faster than I thought. I think Kansas is very hot. Oklahoma-Missouri.
Oklahoma.
I'm going to say Missouri, and I feel bad because anytime I disagree and pick my home team, I think it's me being a homer. But, Missouri didn't shoot all that well against OU the first time around. OU will shoot better from three-point range, but I like Missouri's legs a lot better than I like Oklahoma's legs at this point. So we'll go to the coin toss.
Watching Mizzou at Mizzou Arena and watching the OU game, it seemed like Oklahoma really had no business being on the same court as Missouri. I've said it. They look confused. They look like they wanted no part of Missouri. They looked like they were the type of team that shouldn't have to deal with something like this and looking completely incompetent at some stretches on the floor. I'm not saying Missouri doesn't have a shot to win. I'm not saying that Oklahoma can't come out and lay an egg just because they're in their home state or anything like that. And in essence, I'm covering my bases here. I don't want to be the one that called the upset. But at the same time, Oklahoma is certainly better than we saw at Mizzou Arena. And Mizzou has proved that they're not always the same team they are when they show up to Mizzou Arena.
Touche. All right. So we got a coin here. We got heads and tails. Heads will be, I guess, Oklahoma. Tails will be Missouri. And the winner is... I just dropped it in my seat. Hold on.
Drama.
Yeah. I guess that means overtime. Okay, let's try that again. We got heads. Oklahoma wins.
1-2. How exciting.
Yeah, chalk. Everybody loves chalk, right? If it's Kansas-Oklahoma, I realize Kansas, when they beat Oklahoma, they did it without Blake Griffin. on the court, but I still think Kansas is a better team, especially if Missouri, if Oklahoma has just gotten past Missouri. They are going to be, all their three-pointers are going to be coming up short, I think, on Sunday or Saturday.
I think Oklahoma will be exhausted. I think Kansas is a better basketball team, but I think there is also the very real chance that Blake Griffin is absolutely sick of hearing about Kansas being able to win at Oklahoma, and everyone's pointing at Blake and saying, you know, if you were there, it would have been different. That's his one chance to prove it. That could be a pretty epic showdown.
Very much good. I think OU still needs to make three-pointers, though. That's been their X factor when they've been in instead of a very good team being an excellent team, it's because guys are hitting their threes, and I'm not sure. I'm going chalk all the way, baby.
You take Kansas, and just for the sake of drama, against my better knowledge, I will take Oklahoma, just because we know in basketball everything comes down to a coin flip anyway.
That's true. All right, so heads is Kansas, tails is Oklahoma.
We're the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sitting here, like, I'm picking Kansas. That makes me feel kind of dirty here. Winner, tails, Oklahoma. I guess Blake Griffin goes for 40 and 25, and
well, Aldridge actually has a foul called on him in that game.
Well, let's not go too crazy there. But yeah, I guess there you go. Oklahoma, by basis of science, wins two coin tosses, wins the Big 12 tournament. Well, we are past the 36 minute mark.
Wow!
So real quick, let's get to that that extra business.
We can't get into it too much, but the Rock'em Nation Maymays may be making a big appearance once the NCAA tournament comes to an end. So if you are a RMN frequenter, then make sure to be keeping tabs of all of your favorite Maymays and nicknames and inside jokes at Rock'em Nation, because as soon as the nets are cut down in Detroit, the Maymay madness will kick into effect.
Yeah, just think of the possibilities. It's going to be a good time. Yeah, and then we'll enter our period of 4 month preview for college football.
Oh, you get ready, Furman. We're coming.
don't mess with it's the Paladins, right?
The Paladins.
That's right. I like the Stetson Hatters better, but the Paladins are good.
It's pretty solid, we won't lie.
All right, well, I think we're good. I think that's all the analysis you could possibly want from a 4-day tournament in which we only know 4 of the 11 matchups ahead of time. So you only get that kind of analysis here. Stay tuned for a possible another podcast on Wednesday, depending on said color consultation.
Wink.
We'll see you guys later.